Call the meeting to order. Just a reminder, this is a joint hearing between the Agriculture Policy and the Ag Finance, so we won't be taking up any official action. There'll be no minutes to approve or anything like that. I do want to recognize that today is the National Ag Day, and Mr. Nisley provided a bunch of quotes. I won't read them all, but we'll just pick one here. Thomas Jefferson said, "Agriculture is our wisest pursuit because it will, in the end, contribute most to the real wealth, good morals, and happiness." So that's pretty profound. I don't know if I can say anything that profound, other than the fact that agriculture is a noble, noble endeavor. So we should all be proud in who we are, what we do, and why. Today we have a very special person we're going to recognize right out of the gate, and I'm going to be polite, Mr. Cruz. So today we're recognizing Mr. Santo Cruz. We have a house resolution here today, my friends, honoring Santo Cruz on his service to Minnesota agriculture. And it reads, "Whereas Santo Cruz, a native of Melrose and a graduate of St. Thomas undergraduate in law school, is now the Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Human Services. And whereas Santo previously held leadership positions in the Department of Agriculture and was previously the Assistant Commissioner and General Counsel for the Department of Agriculture and the Director of Government Affairs before that. And whereas he was also an attorney for the Department of Commerce, in 2013 through 2014, and Hennepin County Prosecutor from 2010 through 2013. And whereas, as the overseer of the Marketing and Development Division and the Plant Protection Division, and as the Director of Government Affairs within the Department of Agriculture, Santo has capably and effectively worked with farmers, legislators, and stakeholders in Minnesota agriculture. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration of the House of Representatives of the State of Minnesota that it congratulates Santo Cruz on his outstanding contribution to Minnesota agriculture." It's dated March 14th, 2016, signed by the Speaker of the House, Kurt Dowd, Rules and Legislative Administration Chair, Joyce Pepin, and myself, Chair of Agriculture Finance. Santo, I want to thank you. Not only have you done great things for agriculture, but you're a dear friend as well. So please join me in recognizing Mr. Santo. So if you would state your name for the record.
Santo Cruz, although this time I get to say something I've never said before. Santo Cruz on behalf of myself today, so I'll mark my time card accordingly. This isn't me representing any State Department. You know, I have to say, obviously, thank you and for our friendship, Chair, and I really do appreciate the recognition. It's, for a kid from Stearns County, it's both embarrassing and also you want the attention at the same time. So I will say that I've never ever, in the hours and hours that I've spent testifying at the legislature, I've never had notes, and today won't be any different. But I will tell you real quickly what has been the two things that have gone through my mind again and again as I've spent so much time up here, because I wonder if you ever wonder, where is he pulling this from?
Always.
So the first thing I usually think about as I'm up here testifying, and it does reoccur to me a lot, it recurred to me this morning, and that is, if you had told me when I was 9 years old, barefoot and fishing for bullheads underneath the Stewart Bridge on County Road 186 and Sherwood Road, the gravel road I grew up on, there with the Gottwald boys filling a 5-gallon pail full of bullheads, that one day I would be sitting here testifying in front of you all about agriculture, I would have definitely said, "You've got the wrong Mexican." There's just no doubt about it. The other thing I think about from time to time when I'm up here is if you had told the farmer that owned the farm that we worked on, Albert Meyer, who was like a father to me and definitely turned me from a boy into a man by applying a lot of work, I would have said, if you would have told him the same thing, he would have said, "You mean the kid that broke my baler again and again and again." And so that's really just to say that God's been very good to me. I've been given a lot of opportunities that, to be honest with you, I don't know that I've always deserved. And so what I've tried to do to return the favor is I've tried to just be useful and not waste any of those opportunities. And that's manifested itself by trying to help wherever I could help. I think that most of you have worked with me in some capacity, And I took a really revolutionary approach to government work and advocacy. If you called, I answered. If you called and I wasn't there, I returned the call quickly. If you asked for something, I made it a top priority to go get it. If you asked me to testify on your bill, I looked for a way to say yes, not no. If you told me that you were you need me to do something, and I said I was going to do it, I went and did it. So I took that type of approach in my work, and I've been very handsomely rewarded for what I consider to be basic manners. So I appreciate all the opportunities that have been given. I hope I won't squander any of the new ones that have been presented to me. But it's still just going to be the same Santo that just tries to be useful wherever I end up. I've got a lot of people that have helped me get to where I am, and a lot of people that have showed me how to do my job. A lot of them are in this room. So I just want to say thank you for your friendship, for your leadership, and for your advocacy. Thank you.
Chair Anderson, I would add my congratulations. And Santo, on behalf of those of us in Stearns County, we're all proud of you. So, very good. And you were a great help last year when we worked and finally got the Ag Tourism Bill passed and signed. So thanks for your guidance and expertise on that. So, again, thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Santo, thank you very much. He is absolutely right. He has been, and he's tried to be useful. I would have to say he's been more than useful. And he's absolutely correct when he says that if I called, he answered. If I sent him a text, he texted me back and was very instrumental in helping to do a whole bunch of different things that were important to the people in my district. And he has a connection to Kitson County that I appreciate. Just one real quick side note, he said that when he was 9 years old, if you'd said something about that, well, Santo, if you would have told me when I was 56 years old that I'd be doing this, that wouldn't have happened. But I will say this, if he can do the same great work over at DHS that he's done at MDA, DHS has got a tremendous asset. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this might get Mr. Cruz in trouble here, but as a urban-suburban legislator, I think he's done a good job as well. I did see, though, that right after you went to Cuba, then you changed jobs. So I don't know if the economic development with Cuba trade and opportunities of going to Cuba, you moved to a higher salary or something. I don't know, but I want to add my support and voices and recognition to the work you've done, and I think honesty is the currency of our trade here, and that you've done a good job in that, and I appreciate working with you, and hopefully we'll be able to do so again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank you for your work, too, Mr. Cruz. But I'm also glad, Nicola County is home to a lot of agriculture. We're also home to the Security Hospital and the Sex Offender Program, which is just as important in our county. And I thank you for going to the Department of Human Services.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Seeing Representative Lewick.
I just want to echo my thanks you really get it. I'll just put it that way, and really look forward to working with you in your new endeavor, because the area you're jumping into is more challenging in a lot of ways than agriculture, and so just absolutely critical to the ability of rural Minnesota to continue to exist is the whole area that you're taking on. So good luck in that, and I appreciate all the help you gave us new guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lewick, you may have just stolen my thunder with that one. It is really, as a freshman last year, it was an honor to kind of grow into this with hearing you here every single week, and we covered a lot of stuff in the Ag Finance Committee. And you were always helpful, positive. I will remember it was very end of session late, and I went outside to go out for a walk to just get a little bit of fresh air because this whole place started smelling like a locker room. you were out there also, and it was just, you really expressed yourself as a genuine person, and I that to, I think, a lot of people seems rare in government. I don't know if it is, but it seems like that you're very genuine, and I just encourage you to continue that way, and you're going to continue to be very successful.
Thank you very much. Representative Miller, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cruz, I'm going to miss you here because everything that you did to help us get the brewery going was awesome. You are our lead guy to get a lot of things corrected. And that being said, knowing that the state email system really doesn't fluctuate very much with the extensions, you probably still have the same email address. Is that correct?
That's true.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Seeing no other comments, that's enough of the niceties. Nice. All right, Diablo, get the heck out of here.
Sounds good. Thank you.
I'm just kidding. Buddy, thank you. Appreciate it.
All
right, next on the agenda, we'll ask Mr. Ward to come up from the Cooperative Network. I think David's here. And then we are going to change things around. After this, just get ready. Is Ms. Place here? All right, so we're going to move the MDA biodiesel report up after this, okay? All right, very well. Please state your name for the record, who you represent, and begin.
Yeah, my name is David Ward. I'm the Director of Government Relations and Dairy for Cooperative Network, a trade association that advocates for cooperatives in Minnesota.
So welcome.
Thank you, Chair Hamilton and Chair Anderson and members of the committee. Today is Co-op Day at the Capitol, and in the spirit of the six cooperative principle, cooperation among cooperatives, cooperative members from throughout Minnesota will be traveling to St. Paul from many different cooperative sectors to advocate for the cooperative way of doing business. They will be visiting your offices throughout the day, and we invite you to reception at 4 p.m. down at the Embassy Suites later this afternoon. Cooperatives are a business owned by people, owned by its members. They are big in Minnesota. Minnesota is home to the largest number of cooperatives. There are more than 800 cooperative-based businesses here in Minnesota, owned by more than 3.4 million Minnesotans. Including in those 800 are three Fortune 500 companies. Because cooperatives are owned by those who use them, any profits generated by those cooperatives are distributed to Minnesotans to be spent here in Minnesota. In 2015, Minnesota's largest cooperative returned over $58 million to its Minnesota member owners. While many people may identify a cooperative with the local feed mill, the grain elevator, or the cheese plant, you may not know that the diverse cooperative sectors that Minnesota cooperatives serve. Many cooperatives are often formed to meet their members' needs. Minnesota's cooperatives are meeting the members' needs of Minnesota citizens by delivering electricity. Electric cooperatives cover over 85% of the land mass in Minnesota, serving mainly farms and rural homes. Co-ops were the first in Minnesota to electric utilities to offer wind energy and are now taking a proactive approach to solar. Cooperatives provide financial services. Minnesota's 1.6 million credit union members received about $114 million in financial benefits from their credit unions. In addition, Farm Credit provides the majority of agricultural lending services for Minnesota farmers. And Minnesota is home to AgriBank, one of the largest wholesale banks for farm credit lenders. Delivering the groceries. Food cooperatives are driven by local consumer demand and have a higher per capita concentration in Minnesota than any other state. Co-op conversions are often keeping grocery stores in small rural communities. Putting a roof over your head. Housing cooperatives offer affordable options in high-cost areas. The Twin Cities have the highest concentration of senior housing cooperatives in the United States, and Minnesota houses more student housing co-ops, or more students live in housing co-ops in Minnesota than in any other state. Insuring your property. Mutual insurance companies have provided low-cost insurance services and kept premium dollars in the local economy for over 155 years. They insure almost 80% of Minnesota farms. Keeping you healthy. Healthcare cooperatives provide a mix of clinic services, insurance. Health Partners is one of the state's top-ranked commercial plans and the nation's largest consumer-governed nonprofit healthcare organization. So as you can see, cooperatives play an important part in meeting the needs of Minnesota citizens and its economy. Thank you for the opportunity to visit with you about cooperatives and their importance to Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. And I believe we do have some meetings set up with, like you said, with our area co-ops and whatnot throughout the day. So we appreciate you being here. Thank you for your testimony. And any questions? Representative Clark.
Just a quick question. Are most cooperatives considered nonprofits or for-profits?
They're a nonprofit organization. They're owned by their members, so the profits are returned to their members.
Yes, thank you.
Representative Clark. Any other questions for the testifier? Seeing none, thank you so much, and it's good to see you again.
See you again.
And we won't hold it against you that you're from Wisconsin, so. Okay. I knew it up, so you can't even respond to that. Next. Ms. Blaise. Welcome, Ms. Blaise. If we could get you to state your name for the record, and if you want to introduce the first testifier, if that's okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Whitney Place. I am the Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Today I have with me Kevin Hennessy. He's the manager of our biofuels program, and he's going to present on the biodiesel report and the biofuel infrastructure grant program report.
Wonderful. Thank you. Please, if you'd state your name for the record so that we have it on the tape.
My name is Kevin Hennessy. I am the bioenergy manager at the Department of Agriculture.
Thank you.
And thank you for having me today. All set?
We're all set. And okay. just a little housekeeping. We're planning about 15, 20 minutes. I think we talked about that a little bit earlier, okay, so that we can get through the agenda today.
Mr. Chair, for both reports, so run through both of them.
Okay, wonderful.
Okay, all right. Well, the biodiesel report, you have it in front of you, I think.
Yes.
So I'm just going to summarize it for you. No PowerPoint or videos or anything like that. But first of all, the B10 implementation portion of the report last summer months, if you want to call April summer, from April 1st to September 30th, was our second year of implementation of the minimum blending requirement for 10% biodiesel in those months. The summer before 2014, we were at B10 for July 1st through September 30th. So the way it runs now is the higher amount during April 1st through September 30th on a yearly basis, and then back to B5 for October 1st through March 31st. Statute changes, there were none to 239.77 last year, but for 239.751, the term diesel fuel now can be used to advertise any fuel approved for use in a compression ignition or diesel engine. This saves retailers the expense of having to change canopies to canopies or street signs, marquees to say biodiesel blend when we go up to B10 in the summer months. And basically we base our statute itself on the fact that we have an ASTM standard for B6 to B20 and that is diesel fuel. ASTM specifications, cold weather issues, biodiesel quality. I don't know why I'm even reading this because there were no changes in those categories. No cold weather issues to speak of reported. We always encourage, though, if there are any issues with diesel fuel at all, that they be reported to the Diesel Helpline, which is a free service available to anyone in Minnesota. If they want to send in a fuel sample, then they can have it analyzed, and we can get a better idea of what the issue really is. Diesel and biodiesel prices is the bulk of the report, attempting to explain the complicated issues of federal tax credit, the renewable fuel standard at the national level, and I certainly am not going to take your time going over how the RFS works and that sort of thing, but I will mention that the federal tax credit, again last year at the national level, was extended retroactively for the year of 2015, I believe it was December 18th is when they passed that. So retroactively for the entire year of 2015, but this year they extended it through 2016. So we now have the $1 federal tax credit for blending biodiesel for this current year through December 31st, which really helps in terms of planning for blenders and those involved in fuel sales of biodiesel and diesel fuel. The RFS RINs, I was told not to say RINs at this hearing, but I don't see how I can avoid saying it because it is another mechanism that can reduce the cost of biodiesel to the blender. I think I'll just leave it at that at this point. If you want to ask questions, feel free to. But, you know, I did teach junior high for a number of years. I pride myself on making complex things seem simple, but I don't know if I can really pull that one off in a matter of minutes. I've included a lot of tables in the, we have included a lot of tables. I had a lot of help putting this report together, so it wasn't just me. It just starts with me, and then I get a lot of other help in the department and elsewhere putting the report together.
Excuse me, Mr. Hennessy, we do have a question, and if we can go ahead and Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back to the federal tax credits, I'm glad you said you like to simplify things and so forth. That's really helpful for me. Can you explain simply how the federal tax credit works?
It's a, Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, the federal tax credit is a blending credit. So when a gallon of biodiesel is blended, it's a dollar they can count toward taxes. I'm not exactly sure how that works, but it basically takes a dollar off the cost of a gallon of biodiesel. So there is a way to recoup that dollar through, I suppose, their tax professional or whatever they can use to get it back.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, and then just to be kind of clear, how is that passed on to the consumer?
Mr. Hennessy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, how it's passed on to the consumer is extremely complicated, and just to know that, you know, these mechanisms to reduce the cost of biodiesel do factor in, and that in the end, the cost of B100 is below the cost of number 2 diesel when you factor all those factors into a third-party blender in particular, not necessarily our refiners, but or those that are obligated by the RFS. So when you factor them all in, and I've tried to show that in, I believe it's the last table in the report, if you have the color version or even the version with the various symbols for the, you can see what the price is with no B100 straight, B100 if you took off the RIN, B100 with a dollar tax credit, and then with both of them combined and how that compares to number 2 diesel. So you'll see 5 different lines, and the very bottom with all the credits, the very top with no credits, and number 2 diesel in the middle there. So I'm not saying, you might have to stare at it for a while, I do still.
Representative Fabian?
It does simplify things, I think that graph does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did stare at it for a while, my eyes went cross-eyed, so I just quit.
The color version is really especially helpful, so.
All right. So we're going to continue taking a few questions, is that
sure.
Okay? All right.
Chair
Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just an opinion, first of all, comment to Representative Fabian's question. I think when those tax credits have been extended late in the year, consumers don't get the benefit of that $1 a gallon. It's pocketed by somebody, but not the consumer. My question, Mr. Hennessy, there was talk on the federal level of changing that credit to a producer credit instead of a blender credit. Talk about what that would do and what the difference would be.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, your first point is well taken as to no one knows what happens to it when it's retroactively extended. There, when they sell B100, they do issue a certificate with it, but you've got to have that certificate then and use it retroactively. So the prices looked really out of whack at the end of the year when you look at it retroactively. So far this year, things are nice and steady and a nice little pad in the middle there for profit, potentially, for the third-party blender. But as far as for a producer credit, then it would begin with the producer. Hopefully some of that money would go back into infrastructure then from the producer to increase production levels of biodiesel around the country. So they would use more of that money than would sit with the producer to begin with. Right now, some of it goes to the producer in terms of, you know, the price of B100, I would say. But in terms of, you know, increasing biodiesel production nationwide to meet RFS goals, it might do. I think that's probably the main argument for that.
Chair Anderson, follow up. We have a question, Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Hennessy. You said there was no issues or little reported cold weather issues this year. We had a mild winter. The logging industry in northern Minnesota pretty much ran around the clock when they had cold enough weather to haul timber out. So are you is there a compilation of data over, say, a 5-year period or something like that? Because last year, sitting on the Cushing County Board, we had the room full of loggers telling us to do something about this diesel because it was continually gelling up. And so I don't know if that's a proper question for you or if you can answer that, but I'd appreciate some input. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative. You know, we encourage the loggers and anyone in the state to send in their sample to the diesel helpline, first of all, so we can actually get to what the problem would be with the fuel. And if it is biodiesel, where is the biodiesel coming from? What are the properties of biodiesel that are causing that? The logging industry does have an exception, or is on the list of exempt equipment, the six exempt equipment categories. So I'd wonder what equipment it is they're specifically talking about. I know that they use it, you know, like good Minnesotans that they are, they use biodiesel even when they're allowed not to use it. I've heard that through back channels. So, but we encourage them to go through the diesel helpline. I circulate that number. You know, it's on my desktop and my computer. It's easy to circulate that.
Representative Eklund, follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I admit I need to educate myself more on this. I think some of that exemption may be for the equipment in the woods itself, but they've been complaining about the over-the-road trucks, too. Mm-hmm. So, and I've got the number circled. I will pass that number on in case they don't have it. So, well, thank you, Mr. Hennessy.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we still do. The other factor is we do have the waiver on number one diesel until May 1st, 2020. So, you know, diesel fuel itself gels at certain temperatures, and so we just want to know what the issues are. And, you know, we're not adverse to dealing with the facts as they arise, but, you know, we want them to be facts that come through the diesel helpline. It's a free service, so we encourage everyone to send their samples there.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Representative Eklund. And Representative Eklund, we're more than happy to sit down and go through some of those exemptions and stuff with you, too. So more than happy to work with you on that. Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hennessy, just a suggestion, maybe it would be a good on the department's part to go up to Cochin County and sit down with the county commissioners and the people who are involved in hauling products from the forest into the Boise Cascade or whatever, the truck drivers who are doing this. And, you know, it might be a good way to, you know, get the word out and let people know what the options are.
And Mr. Chair, Representative, we'd be happy to do that. That would be no problem doing that. So.
Yes, and you know what, Representative Eklund does bring up a good point. I know when we first introduced biodiesel, we did have some issues. I think we'd all acknowledge that. However, even today, it seems like that it's very easy for people, or convenient for people, to automatically claim that the issue is on biodiesel, which in fact it is not. We've worked out all those, and so I think through the dialogue and the educational process, I think we can go a long way to address these concerns. So, yeah, thank you, Mr. Hennessy. Yeah.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Thanks to all the questions. I really have covered the last part of the pricing. I think it's just a matter of minor study, looking at graphs and seeing where the credits come in and benefit pricing. There's also some RAC data there as well for nationwide and for Minneapolis-St. Paul. And the last part, the impact of Minnesota's biodiesel requirements, production capacity. I have the numbers down for what these are statutory requirements. So what percentage of our 63 million now covers the B10 requirement? What would cover a B20 requirement? It's 91.4 on the seasonal B10 and 54.8 on a seasonal B20. And as far as feedstocks go, we currently have our 3 million gallon plant in Isanti using primarily alternative feedstocks to soy, and REG down in Glenville, a 30 million gallon plant, is using primarily ethanol plant corn oil, non-edible corn oil. So we are easily covering that non-soy portion of the statute.
All right. We do have another question. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the report. I'm curious about the B20 standard that I believe starts in May of 2018. Could you update us on readiness to meet that standard or any progress in meeting that standard?
Thank you, Mr. Hennessy.
Mr. Chair, Representative, B20 and B10 are under the same ASTM standard. Obviously, B10 is 10% more than B20. I mean, B20 is 10% more than B10, and I used to teach math. You know, they're all under the same standard, and at some point nationally, a lot of people are blending B20 when the price is right, like Love's Truck Stops or Pilots or what have you. You know, we know of that going on nationally as well. So we keep an eye on those just to make sure that everything's going smoothly. And, you know, the temperature in April, the temperature at the end of September are all considerations, but the quality of biodiesel continues to improve with the BQ 9000 program through National Biodiesel Board, keeping quality high, and so it's looking good at this point with 2 years to go, I would say.
Representative Johnson? Chair Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Mr. Hennessy, I think we'd all agree that this country literally runs on diesel fuel. Do you have any numbers in terms of the trend in terms of gallons used? Is it going up? I would assume it is. Do you have any numbers that would tell us the number of gallons used in this state?
Mr. Hennessy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I have the numbers as far back as I can get them from the Energy Information Agency as far as Minnesota, and then we break out with them. We have broken out the sectors that actually would blend biodiesel under our minimum blending requirement. Right now, those are the numbers they had for 2014. They're always a year behind. Their numbers come out in December. So I do have trend graphs, as, you know, for what it's been since 2009. It right now looks like we might not need a little more capacity come 2018. But kind of keeping my eye on that, the industry tells me that, you know, they're in a position where they probably will have increased capacity by that time. So. So at this point, I'm watching it, but I don't see a cause for alarm in that topic.
Chair Anderson. Okay. So you want to? There's one more about the task force comments, or are we done with the report?
That was all I was going to say about the biodiesel report, Mr.
Okay.
Chair. If there's no more questions.
All right. Any other questions from members? I think we did a good job asking questions and answering them along the way. So, all right. Well, that's wonderful. We're still on time.
We are?
No, we are. We are.
Mr. Chair, I was going to cover a bit of the Minnesota Biofuels Infrastructure Partnership Program, which involves some of our funds at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, $3.05 million of our Agri Fund, and $500,000 an allocation that the legislature passed last session for E15 infrastructure. Last summer, June 18th to be exact, the USDA issued a request for proposals for, they had $100 million for ethanol infrastructure grants, and we at Minnesota were interested in tapping into those, so we used our agri money, we used that $500,000, we used private. Our ethanol plants came forward, and the Minnesota corn growers came forward for $2.56 million total, for a total of $6.11 million that we put up in addition to retailer in-kind as well. And in the end, we put in our application July 14th, a day ahead of time, and then September 15th, we signed our contract with USDA for an $8 million grant. So all totaled, that's $14.11 million in cash awards to our service stations throughout Minnesota. November 4th, we started realizing that our previous grant program, we had 2013 to 2015, where you might have seen some stations that have blender pumps at all their islands now throughout the state, and in particular here in the metro, such as at many of the Minoco sites here in the metro. But we saw increased interest to the point where $14.11 million might not cover all the interest. So what we decided to do, just in terms of fairness to applicants, was issue an RFP. The other factor behind that is we are, according by USDA's guidelines in our contract, we're supposed to have all this money spent and installed by December 30th of this year. So we issued the RFP to finish on, I believe it was January 23rd, maybe. We extended that 2 weeks because of the holidays. We were open during the holidays, so for 2 weeks of the holidays, we extended it to February 3rd. we had an absolutely amazing response to this 150 applicants request for $27.7 million with 14.11 available, as I said before, and 268 million gallons of fuel pumped at those locations. Since that time, we've reviewed the applications. We have prioritized. We have approved the awards through the commissioner. We had a meeting with the funding partners last week where we approved the awards, and we end up funding, according to those, the plan is we've funded 104 projects, approximately 236 million gallons of fuel, which represents 88% of the applied for fuel volume. We're in the process now of contacting applicants and negotiating contracts for those awards. So, you know, we're looking at these involved E15, E25 retrofits for pumps, E85 dispensers. These are all under the contract with USDA now. Mainly blender pumps that would offer E15 and a higher level of ethanol, so something for a flex fuel vehicle would be something over E15. Above ground storage tanks, because we were looking at E15 supply. And the last category, there's one more category, which is underground storage tanks, because many of our storage tanks around the state are not compatible with ethanol blends above 10%. So, you know, we've worked hand in hand with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency on compatible infrastructure over the past number of years with our E85 program and with our grant program from 2 years ago to make sure that installed infrastructure is compatible with higher blends of ethanol. This just continues that on in a much larger sense. And one more thing I want to mention is the overall goal of the BIP at the national level was, and it said, and I quote, "The primary objective of the BIP is to increase consumption of ethanol or biofuel in the form of ethanol." And that was always first and foremost our guiding principle, our criteria, including other criteria too, but in particular that one, as we looked at grant applications and the use of these funds in our awards that are going to service stations and other suppliers in the chain around the state. But it's a short timeline, December 30th. You know, I've spent a lot of time up till now over the last few months on this, and I don't expect that to change through December 30th.
Mr. Hennessy, I think we'll continue to take questions as we go here. Representative Miller.
thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hennessy, thank you for all that work on blender pumps and E15 and what have you. I have been told by people that are looking to install these, and I can't say across the whole state, but this has been sort of a challenge in getting these implemented. Have there been efforts or improvements, or has there been anything that's been we've been able to do to make this more accessible? Because I know some people that have installed them that had a lot of problems, and some that are thinking about it are kind of being scared away a little bit.
Mr. Hennessy.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure, not knowing exactly what their problems are. I tend to be more of a nuts and bolts person at the Department of Agriculture, so, you know, it's, you know, kind of like, what don't you like about your cheeseburger, you know? Is it the cheese? Was it the ground beef? I don't know. So I would need to know a little more specifically what the problems were. But, you know, that the cost is one issue for the retailers. You know, there are other issues around, you know, chip readers and things like that as well for them, I know, too. So, you know, the cost of converting over to a different infrastructure. You know, we're trying to help. We're trying to show the viability of this. This is a different way of looking at fuel, offering these higher octane, higher ethanol blends. You know, not just a cult following. Like when I get E85, I have to back in up on Grand Avenue just right. I don't even know. You know, I heard by word of mouth that they offer it, and I'm not sure about the price until I'm face-to-face with that pump. We're looking at everything has to be on a marquee sign. You know, the public knows the fuel's out there. It's at every aisle, and they can go up and easily access these fuels now as opposed to just a small little station here and there. So,
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hennessy, I think the problems that I hear are in the permitting and the process by which they are changing the pumps and adding the new tanks and stuff like that. That's where I think the difficulties are.
Yes, Representative, or Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, that has been true, and the whole point of this grant program is compatible equipment, and hopefully that makes it easier to go from the outset. You know, the two people that are highest in the chain on actual installations with the MPCA I work with very closely, and you know, they know what we're doing and we know what they're doing. There's not a whole lot of secrets anymore in terms of what's going on in this program. So, you know, if there are issues, they know about them, or they will know about them very soon if I know about them. So,
Representative Miller?
No, all right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hennessy, that $500,000 came out of this committee, or the bill originated in this committee last year. And I think the intent was to work with stations that had a relatively, if I can use the word, inexpensive changeover to be able to offer more E15 or higher blends. And now you say that money's has been combined and put into the entire general grant program. So my question is, in your RFP, was there a place for these, let's call them cheaper fixes, or is it all going to be breaking cement and new tanks and major remodeling at some of these stations? Can you talk about some of the projects and in the scope of the projects?
Mr. Anderson.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, a very, very good question. We had, in the RFP, we had a section for E15, E25 retrofits, because rather than just look at E15, you know, we're looking at a national standard of E25 for a higher octane fuel that ethanol could provide, you know, for a higher compression engine that would actually fit into the CAFE standards. So that's kind of an aside, but as far as your issue, we had $700,000 in a dedicated E15 retrofit fund in the RFP. Blender pumps also, all the blender pumps, we require that they offer E15 as well as a higher blend of ethanol. So any blender pump out there will be offering E15 if they want funding for that. And we stand if they're going to get the full funding for a blender pump, they're going to be offering both fuels. So blender pumps, again, not necessarily digging involved or, you know, groundbreaking to put on a new pump, but not the quick fix like a retrofit kit would be, not the low cost. You know, we encourage that. We're just, and with the above ground storage tanks that were funded, you know, then there's now the possibility for a separate supply. Now they can have E15 delivered from a location, now a jobber who is blending E15, and they don't have to splash blend and do illegal things going into the terminal and things like that. So, you know, we're staying above board with everyone. You know, these things just unfortunately take time to catch on, and we have some national issues too that need to be addressed as far as E15 as a mainstream fuel year round. So,
Chair Anderson. Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Mr. Hennessy. Could you also talk about the geographic spread of the projects that have been approved, and are those finalized, and some of these going to be coming on outstate as well?
Mr. Hennessy.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, anytime we have a grant program through the Department of Ag, geographic location is very important, down to the point where when we were looking at our last few, if they were across the street from each other, we couldn't really justify giving one rather than another. But our primary goal was volume and getting more ethanol out into the general public, the best use of these funds. You know, when you look at dollar per gallon, that kind of a thing. When you look at it, statewide, though, it's pretty well spread out. I can't share that map at this point, but it is very impressive how well it is spread out. You know, there is certainly a concentration of metro, but it does go statewide and into our other smaller metros and even into the country at times. So,
Chair Anderson.
All right, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for this report as well. I'm looking at page 5 and about the public-private partnership. I'm always interested in public-private partnerships that work, particularly those that leverage federal dollars that come to Minnesota. Can you share any ideas you have about what made this one work?
Mr. Hennessy.
Well, I think, you know, other states, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, other states that got large awards, they had lined up major retailers. Texas and Florida had major, large-scale retailers already lined up completely. We didn't have a lot of retailers that had lined up ahead of time. But what we did have is we had a successful grant program over the last 2 years, and we had the corn growers, we had the plants, the Minnesota biofuels plants, we had the prime, the pump, poet plants, and we had a couple independent plants that put up $90,000, $45,000 each to make that 2.5 some million. So I think in the end, USDA was, and from my workings with USDA in this project, they're very impressed with the fact how we got behind this grant program as a state and put up that money to leverage what they were able to give us. We asked for $12 million in the beginning. They did get us down to $8 million, but it was $100 million nationally. They had to look at all the states and what they were leveraging. But $8 million was the fourth highest nationally. So we were only outdone by Illinois, Florida, and Texas. So we were pretty proud of that.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And then a follow-up would be, did the flexibility that we've afforded the agri-funds contribute to this this successful partnership as well?
Mr. Hennessy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, very much so, but I'll let my colleagues at the Department of Ag talk about agri.
Representative Johnson, follow-up? No? All right. Mr. Hennessy, please continue. You have more on this report?
Mr. Chair, that's all I had at this point. We're working on the awards, and we hope everyone will be happy with the results when we're all done. I'm ecstatic with the results, but, you know, that's my job. So.
Wonderful. Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. When will those results be made public, Mr. Hennessy?
Mr. Hennessy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I now have this one memorized. According to Minnesota Statute 13.599, we can't really make this public until we've executed contracts with all the grantees, so I'll keep you posted. You're like the first one I'd want to mention it to, and if there's some way I can talk to you about it some other time with a confidentiality signing or something, I'd be happy to.
My lips are sealed.
Sure.
Yeah, I think before we finish this, it has been a real success story. And I just want to thank also the corn folks, the Corn Research and Promotion Council, and the state's ethanol plants really got behind this program. As you can see by their contributions, they stepped up, put their money where their mouths are, and really helped make this program go. So besides all of us saying thanks and congratulations to Washington and to everybody else, I think the industry itself needs to be applauded too for their direct action in supporting this program as well.
Absolutely.
And Mr. Chair, one more shout out is the Minnesota Corn Growers through the American Lung Association, another partner, and the Minnesota Biofuels Association have also contributed in kind expenses for admin and marketing and other things involved in this grant program. So that also was very influential in leveraging what we did get. So.
Well, thank you. Mr. Hennessy, I don't see any other questions on this part. Ms. Place, would you like to bring up your next testifiers?
Sure, Mr.
And Ms. Place, I think beforehand, while they're coming up, could we just acknowledge we have some FFAers in the crowd? Can we quick get an introduction of who you are and where you're from? We'll start. Can we start over here? Somebody, if you have a spokesperson that just wants to stand up and not you, sit down. I know that guy. I know him well. As a matter of fact, that gentleman, we competed in the Young Farmers and Ranchers Discussion Meet competition years ago, right? You wanna guess who won? You wanna guess who won? We'll save that for another time. The gentleman that just stood up, where are you from? If you just state your name and where are you from?
Eli Bakken, Rock. We're in Minnesota.
Rock County? All right. Is everybody from Rock County? All right. Are you gonna be around here for a while? Okay, what I'd like to do is pick a spokesperson. When we're done with this, if you'd like to come up and just share a little bit about what you're doing, where you're from, and what you're doing, okay? All right, how about on this side? Now look at that. Do you see this? They all jump up. All the women jump up over here, guys. Take note. Who do we have over here?
We're from Worthington.
All right, welcome. So
All right. Will you be able to stick around for a while as well?
Believe so.
All right, so what we'd like to do is figure out who you'd like to testify, and at the end, when we're done with the reports, if you have some time, if you'd like to come up, we'd like to hear from you, okay? All right, thank you. Welcome. Thanks.
This competition?
Not today. It's friendly. Today is friendly. So in this place, if you'd like to introduce your next testifiers, and or what's on the agenda next, Miss Place?
Our next testifier is Mary Hanks. She's the Division Director of the Ag Marketing and Development Division, and she's going to talk about our Ag Re-program.
Wonderful. So again, if you'd simply state your name for the record and begin, and welcome.
Thank you. My name is Mary Hanks. I'm the Director of Ag Marketing and Development at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And today I'm here to talk about the Agricultural Growth Research and Innovation Fund, that program. I believe you have our 2015 report in your packets.
All right, members. Yes, we do have it. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Hanks.
Good. And we have a handout that I believe will be going around, too. It's part of the report, and the back is one of the appendices, but we're handing out a copy that is in color, so it's a little bit flashier. As you know, the Agricultural Growth Research and Innovation Fund, which I will call AGRI for to help me out, was established in Minnesota Statutes 41A-12 in 2009. This was an effort to advance Minnesota's ag and renewable energy industries. The funds that were eventually appropriated beginning in 2013 came from the money originally used for ethanol producer payments, so a continuation of supporting the ag economy in the state. The first year that funding was provided was fiscal year 13. We were appropriated $2.3 million. Beginning with 2014, with fiscal year 14 and ongoing, the program is funded by an annual general fund appropriation base funding of $10.235 million. In the 3.5 years of the program, the state investment of about $31 million has been matched by about $180 million in private investment. The focus has been on economic impact to generate jobs in the ag sector, promote business expansion, and those areas primarily have been livestock investment, value-added businesses and market development, farm-to-school, crop research, beginning farmers, and renewable energy, as you heard from Mr. Hennessy. We have a short video of some of our grant several of our grant recipients. We didn't bring testifiers in with us, but we thought this would be a really nice way to hear from some of them. Right. Just a few minutes.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Hanks. Can we get some help so we can have a little more sound?
Value-added grants provide an agency with a very nice focus for us to help us launch and expand our business. MDA has been a great partner so far.
Sorry, we're not tech wizards.
I'm not as well, so. Thank you.
Since the AGRI program began in 2013, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture has been able to fund over 1,000 projects that have positively impacted Minnesota's agriculture and economy.
Now, the value-added grants provided a very nice stepping stone for us to help us launch and expand this business. MDA has been a great partner so far in helping us get to where we want to be and to help us help other small farm families in the area.
The existence of the program is immensely helpful to anybody in our position, which is the position of being really a small producer. I would love to see all schools in the state of Minnesota and nationwide take advantage of locally grown products.
To receive a value-added grant was very rewarding, and it was something that we always knew we would apply for, because really our operation is exactly what they were looking for, I believe, in terms of adding value to our own milk on our farm and creating an end product direct to the consumer. And it was a way of adding the next generation to our farm as well.
it's a testament to the state that they've actually taken concrete steps to try and promote and enhance agriculture in the state.
Us receiving the Farm to School grant has allowed us to have a strong voice in the community because we're leaders as being part of the educational platform. We're staging changes that are expected or encouraged in our community.
Well, I think it's a great opportunity for just young producers like myself to be able to get that step forward, because you have to work in the industry a while before you can invest in a business. It's nice that there is grants, there is people out there looking for young people and looking to help them succeed in the business.
And it really just helped out. It took some of the burden off of us, and we're able to get new equipment and be able just to move forward as a business and grow.
We have the possibility of being able to exactly reach out to other farmers to say, you know, do you want to start a partnership or a relationship? And you know, we can handle a one-time-a-month delivery, and we have the space to store it.
I actually think this grant is amazing in the way that they help the small businesses grow.
We needed a way to expand to help when I was out of school, so this was a good way to help the environment as well as help us expand.
It was very helpful to us starting out in a new livestock venture.
The grants improved our business immensely. We simply wouldn't be able to do what we're doing now without the grant.
We just really appreciate the support that the state provides for value-added products in the state, especially for agriculture, because it is such an essential aspect of our state's economy.
Very nice.
Well, and I'd like to do a shout-out. We hired an ag communications student worker last year, and she produced the video for us. So it was an in-house production. She got out to some amazing farms and did a really fine job.
Well, yes, very fine. Thank you.
You have the fiscal year 15 report in front of you. In the summary, there was for last fiscal year, for the $10 million in state investment, there was approximately a $60 million match from private investment. We estimate that there were just over 1,000 new jobs on livestock farms, 61 new full-time and 58 new part-time jobs in value-added businesses. 20 schools increased their purchases of Minnesota-grown food, and 14 meat processors expanded their processing capacity or improved their efficiency. That's just a snapshot of just last year. In the report, there's much more detail, some testimonials, so to speak, from some of the grant recipients on the value of the grants to them. I'd like to focus just for the rest of my testimony on the impacts for since the program started in fiscal year 13. I think it gives a much better perspective. If you have the color handout in front of you.
Yes.
The major areas of investment beginning in 2013 have been in livestock investment. This past year, in fiscal year 16, we are in the process of awarding $2 million to livestock producers. As you can see, since the beginning of the program, we've received about 1,000 applications totaling $16 million. We were only able to invest in 338 projects for a total of about $5.6 million. That just speaks to unmet need, especially in the livestock industry. This year, we received 287 applications requesting $4.8 million. We've been able to award 104 grants to livestock producers for just under $2 million. And those livestock producers are matching with $43 million of their own dollars to match our almost $2 million. Again, unmet demand in this area in particular. The turkey industry was given priority this year to help provide some funds as they were retrofitting barns and those sorts of things to go along with the, I believe there's a $10 million loan fund now for the turkey industry for disaster assistance. The number of jobs during construction, those are short time jobs, but again, they're very needed in the rural communities. And then many, many jobs created on these farms. Many of them were expansions, bringing young members of the family or other young farmers in with them. About 84% of the grants from the beginning have gone to farmers who have been farming for less than 10 years. And 97% of these grants have made environmental improvements along with expansion or other improvements to their operations. The second most important, well, I don't want to say important, but if we look at dollar amount invested, the value-added grant program, since the beginning, we've received 334 applications for $12.6 million. And again, we were able to fund about a third of those applications and have invested $4.46 million. This year, we do two rounds of these grants. We just received 67 applications for $2.7 million. And this round, we only have $700,000 to invest. The match, again, on those 67 applications is $16 million. Most of these funds, we do grants, like for livestock, it's only 10% of the project. For value added, it's 25%. So what we're doing is providing some sure dollars to, say, a livestock livestock producer or a value added business who can then go to the bank and say, I have 25% or I have 10% of this investment. Let's talk about a loan at a good rate. The department also has quite a few loan programs which we try and match up. We have it's not Agri, but sorry, I'm getting off track. But just to talk a little bit about some of the connections to other things at the department, we have a Farm Opportunities Loan Program that is, I think it's at 3% right now. But a farmer who's entering into a value-added business or any other sort of improvement on their farm can apply for a 3% loan, their participation loans through their local bank. So if they can go with one of our 25% grants for a business on the farm, we also have loan programs that can, at low interest rates, that can help.
All right. Ms. Hanks, I think we'll take questions,
sure,
too, as we go. Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. We mentioned looking at the livestock investment portion of it with a 10% state match. Sometimes when either state or federal money goes to a project, there are more regulations, criteria, hoops to jump through. So in your program, are any added regulations added to the projects that maybe would not be if the grant were not including this the state grant part of it?
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, the only requirement we have for our grants is send your receipts and your invoice in. There's no additional regulations. If an operation expands beyond their permit, then obviously they would have to apply for a different permit. But we don't require anything except to send your receipts in.
Okay. Chair Anderson.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Because an instance back in the area where there was a state grant, they had to go by prevailing wage, something like that. But you don't have any requirements like that with your program.
Ms. Sanks.
Chair Hamilton, Representative Anderson, no.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Anderson, okay. Please continue.
Okay. One of the outgrowths of the value-added grants is the new market development grant. It's the fourth one on the color handout that I provided. These are funds that go to businesses to help them expand their markets. In most cases, this is a company who's ready to maybe go to a national show and to start to sell regionally or nationally. We have Minnesota pavilions at many of the food shows. We just had people come back from the Natural Products Expo West. We took 12 companies. The process that we followed for the last 3 years is we buy booth space and sell it back to these companies. They're small and middle-sized companies. We sell it back to them for half the price. and they get to have a booth space that they can afford. It's usually a new venture for them. They're in a group with other Minnesota companies with all of our signage and promotion in these show bulletins and stuff. The companies, just very briefly to give you an idea of the companies that went to the Natural Foods, Natural Products Expo, Knott's, which is out of Fergus Falls, it's they make snacks. Johnny Pops out of St. Louis Park, they have frozen fruit and cream pops. Buddy's Nut Butters from Minneapolis. Acme Organics, they make a new organic barbecue sauce. Whole Me, which is a nutrient-dense clusters, sounds like a snack food. Hot Dang, it's a grain-based frozen burger patty. What a great name. Seven Sundays, which is a muesli company. Total Health Advanced Nutrition and Fridley Supplements and Functional Foods. Bee-Free Honey from Plymouth. Think Mint from Northfield Microgreens. Doctor in the Kitchen, they make flaxseed crackers, and Bear Honey, which produces honey. These are all small companies who have not been around for very long. And this is just an entree into a very large market. It's just an example. We also provide some funding through this program for companies to improve their signage for their booths, help them go to shows where we don't actually have a pavilion set up, so they can, we'll cost share some booths there to help them get started. And again, this is limited to small and medium-sized companies. In the farm-to-school program, we've had great success. As you saw, there were a couple of testifiers on the film. Over the course of the program, we've had 98 applications for $2 million. We've funded about half and have invested about $1 million. The estimated sales from those schools, Minnesota Products, is $3.4 million. We've gone from schools buying very, very little local to about $3.4 million in sales in just a few years. We're not totally responsible for that, but I think helping schools buy equipment that allows them to buy local, prepare from scratch, store. One of the schools buys local flour and grain and makes pasta. It's just, I think, been a real good thing for many of our small producers that now sell to schools and institutions, helps them build their markets, and it's looking like this will expand into more institutions as this advances to hospitals, nursing homes. We're hoping that that's where it's going to go. Right now, we're gonna stay with farm to school for a number of years. The demand is still there. Finally, well, I should probably address the energy issue since that was brought up earlier. Agri-money in the past few years has been set aside for blender pumps, and we had about $500,000 each year set aside already for blender pumps. We've done next-gen energy grants. Those were research grants. So over the years, we've invested about $1.5 million in energy. This year, starting in fiscal year 13 and 17, we've directed those funds instead to the biofuels initiative program. So about $1.5 million each year this biennium have been directed to match the BIP program that Kevin Hennessy was talking about. But it's been essentially the same amount of money that we've invested in energy in the past. There are other programs, Beginning Farmer, Crop Research. I didn't want to go over my time, but I'd certainly be happy to answer questions or follow up with any of you on any of these programs out of Agri.
All right. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question relates to dairy processing. I understand there's we're under capacity for dairy processing, need for more dairy processing. Is Agri been involved with that? Are you seeing any interest in improving dairy processing capacity?
Ms. Hanks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, most of the dairy processing that we've funded through Agri has been value-added, mostly on-farm processing. So, like Redhead Creamery has used their own milk to produce cheese. We haven't directed any specifically to larger-scale processing.
Representative Johnson, follow-up. Representative Vice Chair Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out when you were talking about the new market development, how many of those products have been developed through AURI. So that it's nice to see that the next step is happening for them.
So. Very nice.
Chair Hamilton,
Ms. Hanks.
Representative Keel. The Agri program and MDA works fairly closely with AURI. We know that we deal with the same people. And we have certain services that AURI doesn't provide, and vice versa. We do direct people to AURI for feasibility studies, business development, product development. We provide some of the infrastructure for those businesses, equipment, opportunities for expanding their markets. We're working right now with AURI to provide some funds for feasibility studies. Some of the small companies that come to us really need to back up a step and look at what does the market look like and is it feasible to produce this on a larger scale. So we're working with AURI to help them, and we'll provide grants for companies to do feasibility studies. We think they'll just be more successful in the long run, and AURI is a great partner.
Vice Chair Keel, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I appreciate you explaining that. Just kind of ties it all together for the members.
Thank you.
Ms. Hanks, you know, last year we defined for the first time in Minnesota statute urban agriculture. Worked directly with Representative Karen Clark. Mm-hmm. And Representative Clark took myself and Chair Anderson, and we went out and we actually toured sites around the Minneapolis area. I was in a conversation recently. Another group is very interested in getting involved in agriculture, and mainly their perspective is for the children in the area, so they know where their food comes from. Can you speak to that at all? I know we were going to be reaching out to people across the metro area as well about things within the Department of Agriculture on how they can help. Could you speak to that, and then also who would be the contact person within the Department of Ag as this interest comes my way?
Okay. Chair Hamilton, we have funded some urban ag projects through sustainable ag grants through Value Added. We recently completed an urban agriculture report.
Right.
The contact of the department would be Paul Huguenin. I think that lays out the different sectors within urban agriculture. In particular, the agri funds are directed at economic development and agriculture that involves production for sale. And that's the way all of our funds have been focused. When you get into urban agriculture, which is the intent is education, it doesn't quite fit into our mold, so to speak. You know, we do have Ag in the Classroom, which provides, you know, how your food is grown, where it comes from, to any classroom that wants it. But as far as funding, we've done some small school garden projects, but we've not really focused on urban agriculture as a sector. But again, like I said, we've been focused on growing food for sale, not particularly for education.
And Mr. Nisley, just informing on the Urban Ag Report coming up, so we don't have to get too far into that. It's just, it was very refreshing, and I see that Representative Clark just came in. My question or comment was how we spent time with you, myself, and Chair Anderson, and toured some areas around the cities here, and the interest as it pertains to urban ag. And not only for the educational component, mm-hmm. for the students, but also, just like you're saying, value added, and these businesses starting to emerge. So it's exciting as well. So, yeah.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, businesses such as food hubs have been funded. You know, we may not have done the best job of getting the word out into the urban areas. You know, like most of agriculture, we've been focused in the rural part of the state, not the metro areas. And I think the urban agriculture report will help us focus, and I think will help some other agencies focus.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Hanks. Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to thank you and Representative Anderson as well. I mean, your leadership on this issue has been stellar, and I do look forward to that hearing that you're going to have on Urban Ag. And I know the commissioner did such a fabulous job. I just want to take a moment of saying that, of getting that the stakeholders involved all over the urban area. The report is like this thick, lots and lots of input, so look forward to that. And I do think there will be ways that this and other funds can target urban ag, but we probably do need some special targeting as well.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Clark.
And Chairman Hamilton, I also just wanted to do a little bit of update on our administrative costs. We're allowed 4.5%. We currently have about 4.5 FTEs who manage upwards of 600 grants that are going on at any one time. We went through a risk management assessment of our program with, I guess it's the Department of Management and Budget, I can't keep them all straight, and went through and looked at a process for ensuring that we're handling everything properly, and we did really well. But I just wanted to focus on, just very briefly, we don't just put out a request for proposals, write some contracts, and send out a check. Managing grants is very time-consuming. And I just wanted to let you know that we have started to supplement the cost of managing these grants out of other general funds. We do site visits. Some of these in particular are very time consuming, and just wanted to let you know.
Duly noted. Thank you, Ms. Thanks.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the testifier? Any other questions? Seeing none. Any other comments as it pertains to this report? Ms. Place? No?
No.
All right. Well, thank you. Ms. Place, is that the last testifier?
That is all. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. At this time, we're going to bring our friends from the FFA up. Who would like to come first? Which side? Oh, the guys over here beat you this time. It's kind of funny. We have the girls on that side and the guys on this side. So please, if we'll have them, just move up front. And if you want to bring some friends up, too, you can. Why don't we get all the FFAers? How about you all come up front? Right? We have plenty of room up there. That way he's not all alone. Right? We have some time. So, did you decide who's going to be speaking on your behalf?
I will.
All right. Can we get an introduction from everybody quick? Just your name and where you're from, please.
I'm Tyler Eisler Brown from Magnolia, Minnesota.
Oh. Eric. Magnolia, Minnesota.
Tyler Pickney, Minnesota.
Bill Menzie,
Magnolia,
Minnesota.
Trey
Bakken,
Laverne, Minnesota.
Eli Bakken,
Laverne, Minnesota.
All right. And Mr. Bakken, do you know this guy sitting over here?
Danny
Lopkin. I like this kid. I like this kid.
Right?
Could you say that in the mic?
He lost to you.
Thank you. Thank you. So, please, if you'd sit down, state your name for the record, and again, share us a little bit about who you are and what brings you to St. Paul.
My name is Dylan Menti, and we're with FFA and Farm Bureau at the State Capitol today. And we're here because we're the future of agriculture, and we're just talking to different people about agricultural issues at the time.
So how's that going for you so far?
Well, this is our first session that we've been at or talked to anyone at.
It's a great way to start the day, isn't it? So, any questions for these guys? Any questions? Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just quickly, been amazed by FFA expanding to be not just farm kids. So how many of you young men live on a farm, and how many may live in town where you're from?
Mr. Menti.
All of us up here live on a farm.
Okay.
Chair Anderson?
That shoots at theory.
Representative Clark.
Thank you. It's great to welcome some Rock County folks here. I grew up in Rock County, and one of my brothers graduated from Magnolia, so it's nice to have you here. And one of the reasons for the answer to your question, Chair Anderson, is that Magnolia is a very small town. How many people live in Magnolia?
422.
So, you know, most of the people who are going to school there are living right around.
Right.
Anyway, welcome. It's great to see you all.
You know, this is interesting because, you know, you come from Rock County, and Representative Clark grew up in Rock County as well, comes from Rock County, and she was instrumental in bringing the urban agriculture component to our attention and the importance of educating people on where their food comes from and getting them involved and stuff like that. So there's some wonderful people coming out of Rock County.
Thank you.
So, right. Representative Fabian.
No, I'm just going to say to that point, 422 in my district is a pretty large town.
Yeah. Right? Thank you. Mr. Menti, you have anything else you want to share with us?
Nope.
All right. Well, welcome to the Capitol. We're so glad that you're here. Thank you for taking the time to be involved. And remember, agriculture is noble. And I know you guys are proud of it, but continue to be proud, stay involved, share your story, and, you know, like I said, just share your story every time you possibly can. And you know what? Your dad, he's a good man. I heckle him quite a bit, but he's a good man and a dear friend. So, yeah, welcome. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
All right. Who do we have over here? Come on up. Bring everybody up, and I think we have another group that came in a little bit later. How about we'll bring you up in a minute? All right. So, if we could do the same, if you could just share your name and where you're from, and then we'll hear from the person that you chose to be the spokesperson today. Well, welcome. So who did you decide to sit down and share a little bit about your chapter and where you're from and so far what you're doing up here today? And again, if you could state your name for the record and begin.
All right, I'm Coral Owens, and we're from Nobles County. We're up here today at the farm with Farm Bureau for the FFA and the Ag Hill on, or Hill on the Farm.
Day on the Hill.
Yep. Yeah, and we're just ready to ask some questions and figure out what's going on.
All right. So are you meeting with a number of legislators today? Individual meetings?
Yes.
You are. So I'm very pleased because I represent that area, and so hopefully you're going to swing in and say hello to me. Are you meeting with legislators from, you know, not only rural but metro areas as well? She's
yes.
Looking at you. Yeah. You phoning a friend over here? So. Representative Vice Chair Keel.
Well, I was looking at these lovely ladies who are part of agriculture, right? And I wanted to know how many of you were related to farms or live on a farm.
I believe two of us are, and then the rest are from the city.
Vice Chair Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out that how wonderful it is that, you know, when I grew up, I have four brothers, so no one ever thought I would farm. My husband and I farm now, and I've learned all kinds of things, because back then I had to bake cookies and fill lunches and haul them out in the field, and herd hogs. They got away on us sometimes. So, anyway, I'm beside the point. I really want to encourage you all, the gentlemen too, and the next group that come up, to look into careers in agriculture as you move forward, and it's the only job that provides our not I shouldn't say the only it's one of the jobs that provide our staples that we need. You know, we got to eat, we need clothes, and if you go into forestry, we have to have shelter. So it's for our basic needs, and thank you very much for being involved in FFA.
That's
Thank you, Vice Chair Keel. You know, it's interesting because the gentlemen that were up here earlier, they're all from a farming background, all on a farm. You said two of you are from a farm. Which two?
Me and
my uncle.
Well,
kind of.
Okay, very nice. Could we ask the individuals who did not grow up on a farm, and maybe we could have Kimberly or Brianna to come up and speak, and just share with us a little bit why FFA, right, growing up in town, and why did I single those two out? I know their parents very well, as well. Their mom is a dear, and mom and dad are dear friends, so please state your name for the record, and if you'd share with us a little bit, why FFA, why are you involved?
Okay, so my name is Kimberly Kraft, and I'm from Nobles County. And the reason why I decided to join FFA is because not only because agriculture is just a big thing in our community, it's because we get to see a different side of where our things come from. It's important to know where everything comes into and how important it is to us.
Very nice. And your sister's not going to come up and testify?
No, I don't think so. Okay.
All right. Any other questions for these testifiers here? Well, make sure you tell your mom and dad hello, all of you, as well. Thank you for coming to the Capitol, and hopefully you enjoy your day. Thank you. And we have some others that came in. Would you please, the same thing, if you'd come up and share with us a little bit about who you are, where you're from, and what's the agenda for today? Why are we here?
Hi, I'm Madison Taylor. I am currently serving as the Minnesota FFA State Reporter.
And I am Travis Trindle, currently serving as the Minnesota FFA State Treasurer.
And I'm PJ Arsbold, currently serving as the Minnesota FFA State President.
We're here this afternoon we're here representing the Career and Technical Student Organizations. So we're here with a couple of different student organizations such as FCCLA, BPA, DECA, SkillsUSA, HOSA. So we're here under that umbrella just kind of working through some, having some meetings, listening in on some committee hearings and things like that. So.
Yeah, really our focus today is as our organizations are coming together, being part of co-curricular coursework, specifically us in FFA, working with that agricultural education side, which is really, I know I can speak personally and for Maddie and PJ, how much that has affected us and has been an impactful in our lives.
Yeah, and we'd like to wish everyone a happy National Egg Day. Obviously, everyone in this room knows how important agriculture is to each and every one of us, and that's why we're here. We're passionate about just sharing our stories and sharing how farmers and agriculturalists everywhere are impacting our society.
Very nice. Ms. Taylor, the three of you, did everybody grow up on a farm?
Yes, Chair Hamilton. I actually am from Dakota County, Randolph, Minnesota, which is about 45 minutes southeast of here. And I live on my family's Century Farm. We do soybeans, corn, and then we do canning crops. We grow for Bird's Eye, so we do peas and sweet corn specifically. And then we are actually turkey producers. So we have 16,000 turkeys at our house in Randolph. And we grow for a local company out of Cannon Falls, Minnesota, called Ferndale Market. And they provide the turkey for the Minneapolis School District, all the private colleges in Minnesota, as well as natural food co-ops and other different grocery stores, specialty grocery stores throughout Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa. So that's kind of my background in agriculture.
Thank you.
My background is I grew up on a 200-cow dairy farm right outside of Lanesboro, Minnesota in Fillmore County. So that was my initial start into FFA. But I can speak personally that my experience in FFA has gone much beyond agriculture and really advanced into that leadership side. And I've seen the impact through my school in Lanesboro that it has had on both agriculture backgrounds and students with a non-agricultural background.
Thank you.
And then I did not grow up on a farm. I live in the country, and we do have a few animals, some miniature goats and a miniature horse, but not a farm kid, but very, very excited about agriculture and had some parents who were very involved in the profession as well.
So do you ever make it to the Lanesboro sales barn?
I do get down to stop there every once in a while. So. Yeah.
Well, my brother-in-law is a cattle buyer for Lanesboro sales barn, so we have a connection there as well. So... You know, one of the things, and it's interesting because, growing up on a farm, and we heard over here there's many that did not grow up on a farm. One of the other things we're doing, and again, working with Representative Clark and others, is what we'd really like to see is more FFA chapters, throughout the cities, get kids involved in 4-H, and reach out to different ethnic groups as well. I have very dear friends who are Hmong. Whether it's Hmong, Latino, you name it, African American, we're working with some folks throughout that. And so, is there any type of outreach programs or that we're doing within FFA?
Chair Hamilton, currently we have a couple of FFA chapters in Minnesota specifically that are urban based. AFSA, which is a middle school and high school based out of, I guess I don't know the specific city. Badness Heights. And then there's also a chapter at St. Paul Humboldt, which is one of our city chapters that we like to work with as well. And something that we like to stress and just really get across is that FFA isn't all just about cows, sows, and plows anymore. That's not what the focus is. It's a big part of it, obviously. But like you had mentioned previously, there's a lot of leadership involved, a lot of communication and networking, lots of different experiences for students if they come from a background in agriculture or not. So there's a range of different activities and involvement for these students that they can take part in and get involved so that they kind of understand the background of agriculture but learn more, such just soft skills and just continuous learning throughout their lives to help them in their future careers.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, if I could add.
Mr. Oswald.
You're seeing a lot of programs as well from Minnesota FFA that's just sharing a story of agriculture. If you look at the State Fair, a lot of our exhibits focus on careers in agriculture, trying to reach a younger demographic and show them the opportunities that are in front of them. And then as we go forward, I think you're going to see a big push from agriculture in general to get more agricultural educators. Right now in our state and country, there's a shortage of teachers. So as we push for ag ed programs in schools, we're also pushing for more teachers, more qualified teachers that can fill those roles in those classrooms. So thank you for your guys' support on that. I know you guys are all very great advocates for agriculture education, so thank you.
No, thank you all as well. And you brought up Humboldt High School. The ag teacher over there, I believe, is Mr. Brown right there in St. Paul, and he's fantastic. And we met some very talented students there as well that were actually up here and testified. I believe it was, that was Highland Park. Highland Park, Mr. Yep. Brown's from. Yep. But we had individuals from Humboldt High School that came in and testified.
Yeah.
So.
Mr. Chair, along Staley. With those ones, we have, Forest Lake and a couple other chapters within just a range around the cities, too, that and one of our fellow teammates, Mariah Daninger, actually came from Forest Lake High School in the Forest Lake FFA chapter. So more, based around this city area compared to us coming from the southeastern part of the state. But, yeah. Again, thank you all for having us here today and taking the time to talk to us.
Well, thank you. Any comments or questions from Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it's great to see the FFAers here, but one of the points that they mentioned is the availability of teachers. And some of the things that have gone on here in the legislature in the last couple of years may open some doors for some farmers or whatever who have retired through the community experts and some of those different licensing options that are available out there. So I hope that communities who might be interested in this aren't just saying, well, we don't have teachers to put a program in place. I think that with some creative thinking, there could be some people put in place that could make these programs work.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to maybe make a special connection for a couple of the urban farms in South Minneapolis. One of them has a very active 4-H club, and they've talked about FHA, so maybe afterwards if you could just give me a way that I can have them reach out to you, that would be good.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Any closing comments? We got it covered.
Happy National Egg Day. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. All right, no announcements, no further business. With that, members, we are adjourned. Thank you.